Katie Clark, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. In countries along the Indian Ocean, people are remembering the deadly tsunami. The wave roared across the region 4 years ago today. In Thailand, Buddhist monks performed prayers on the beach in Phuket. The tsunami claimed some 230,000 lives. People around the world opened their pocketbooks to help the survivors. Some of the most generous donations went to children in the hardest-hit region, Aceh, on the northern tip of Sumatra in Indonesia. But as Jocelyn Ford reports, many of Aceh's neediest children aren't tsunami victims. A word of warning, this story contains a graphic image of torture.
At a Turkish-funded children's home for tsunami survivors, some girls gather in the open-air dining room to chat and giggle away the afternoon. Nearby, a girl practices music in her dorm. It's gaily decorated with bright pink bunk beds, and on the floor, rugs with cartoon characters.
How do you do? What's your name?
Wahida.
Wahida. Wahida.
Yes.
And you've got Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny, yes.
Tweety Bird.
This orphanage sprung up in the wake of the tsunami, with 36 girls crammed into houses. It's since moved into a complex of neat lemon-yellow dormitories. The charity has promised to support the 95 girls until they get a job or marry. But some other post-tsunami orphanages haven't fared so well. Supervisor Latifa Muhammad recently began working at the Turkish orphanage after her Malaysian-supported orphanage closed.
It's many places in the world that need help. And maybe after 2 years, maybe they think that we can survive without them, and they have to help another people in another place.
But she says for the children, this sort of short-term support is far from ideal.
When we take the children and make them being a family, the children need time to feel in their heart that they have family now. But after 2 years, they have to separate again. They have to join another boarding school. It's maybe a little hard for them.
In the immediate aftermath of the tsunami, there was a tremendous outpouring of assistance. But as time went on, some of the funds dried up. And child welfare officer Farida Zureini says programs that still have ample funds don't always spend them where they're needed most. At a government office stuffed with rows of wooden desks and a single shared electric typewriter, Farida explains tsunami survivors aren't Aceh's neediest children. She says all but 200 of the 2,500 children who were separated from their parents during the tsunami have been reunited with family members. The children and youth who need the most care today, she says, are those like 19-year-old Ilyas, who lived far from the shore. His trauma happened several years before the tsunami. Ilyas's father was an Achenese separatist rebel fighting the government in Jakarta. Aceh was in its 29th year of a brutal civil conflict when the tsunami struck. The killer wave gave momentum to a peace agreement. It was signed just 8 months after the tsunami. Fadli is a former rebel battalion commander. He says fighters like him have no interest in picking up arms again.
Ex-komandan ini, yang dia pikirkan adalah kesejahteraan.
He says they're bored with fighting. They're now focused on earning money and living the good life. He worries most about the children of combatants who die. They're still thinking about getting even. Fadli took in Ilyas, the son of one of his fighters, because he was concerned by how the boy and his friends entertained themselves. Ilyas himself says it wasn't child's play. Ilyas described how they'd talk about what kind of weapon they wanted to carry and come up with plans for killing their father's murderers. He had plenty of time on his hands. Ilyas says his mom couldn't afford his school fees. An estimated one-third of children who lost a parent in the conflict drop out of school. So ex-commander Fadli is paying for Ilyas's higher education, as well as schooling for three other children of his fallen comrades. In an ideal world, social worker Karen Stewart of Doctors Without Borders Holland says these children would also get emotional care.
There's a tremendous amount of depression and a tremendous amount of anxiety. So if you have parents, or one parent, who is very depressed, cannot even manage their world, there's a lot of feelings of revenge going on. So I'm sure the children pick up on that as well. Then, of course, you're impacting the children to mirror that behavior, to also grow up with that worldview, if you will.
Stuart helped run a group therapy program for villages that suffered from conflict, but they closed it down last year because the mandate is only for emergency care, not long-term. James Bean runs the post-conflict program for the International Organization for Migration.
There's a huge need out here, and it'd be good if there was more assistance given by foreign governments. There just isn't a lot of donor interest in it.
This fall, the government of Aceh started providing free tuition to all orphans, defined as any child who's lost one or both parents. It's also tried to persuade groups supporting tsunami survivors to cover children of the conflict. But so far, it hasn't had much luck. The Turkish orphanage has had better luck. The director said he proposed opening the door to other children, not just tsunami survivors, and the funders agreed. Now 1/5 of their children come from conflict areas. For The World, I'm Jocelyn Ford in Banda Aceh, Indonesia.